Position Informatics Jobs Podcast.
Hey guys, I'm pretty excited to finally get this one out. I was reading a paper actually on therapeutic hypothermia that was published 8 years after the data collection. So I'm not feeling so bad about publishing this one only 8 months late. It was recorded last year at AMIA in at the Scientific Assembly in DC. I had some delays because I kept thinking I was going to be able to get the audio sounding better and better. There were some echo issues, but I finally got it in a good enough situation that I felt good about putting it up. So have a listen. Hope you enjoy.
Interview.
This is the recording. It's a live recording of the Physician Informatics Jobs Podcast. Woo!
All right.
All right. Thank you for being here, and thanks for your engagement. It's kind of funny. They were wanting to fill up the whole time period for this career hub, and so I volunteered to do my podcast during it, and then I wrote probably an overly ambitious introduction where I said you'd laugh and learn, and I was thinking about putting love in there too, but I just left that off.
Just but live, laugh, love.
Yeah, and then I was going to put cry too, but I thought maybe you can cry later about the wasted hour. Just kidding. So, all right. And we are the opening act for, you know, we're right before the opening session, and I'm hoping we can keep this. And so if you guys say good things about the podcast and how it helped, then they might listen. If you didn't like it, tell them too, so that I don't come back. So, all right. So, all right. So the first surprise guest is Dick Schreiber, who is from, there's about six words in the title of your hospital. What is it again?
Well, I'm mainly based at Holy Spirit Hospital, which is in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania, but we are part of Penn State Health.
Okay.
Which is slightly different from Penn State University. Most people think of that as Penn State, with the one in the university area in Center County, Pennsylvania. It's Penn State Health, which, if you've ever enjoyed chocolate, you know Hershey.
Yeah.
And that's where Penn State Health. I am an associate chief medical informatics officer at Penn State Health.
Okay. And you've done a lot of academics here with AMIA and writing papers, and so that's why, one of the reasons that you were invited to talk to us today.
Thank you. I appreciate the offer. I consider myself a community clinician, however. Mm-hmm. Not an academic, although I have academic pursuits, mm-hmm. as you put it. And obviously, AMIA is an academic institution. But my focus has been, first of all, I was in private practice for 25 years and continued to practice as a hospitalist even after I moved over to the informatics arena. But I got interested doing some research. Clinically, my basis for that was actually venous thromboembolic disease, both prophylaxis and treatment. And I participated in studies of that. And with my intern in AMIA, that's how I'm informatics.
Yeah, and you're board certified in geriatrics?
Well, I was. Technically, I had to re-up that every 10 years.
Okay.
But after three board examinations, I thought, nah, I'm not going
to. All right. Yeah, that's a lot. All right. So, I think he's published like 40 papers. So it's not as, he minimizes his contributions. All right. And you've been around a little while, too.
I'm at the tail end.
All right. And then the second person who I invited to come is Christian Rose, who's from Stanford. And I'll let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey. Well, my current titles are I'm an emergency physician and clinical informaticist in Department of Emergency Medicine at Stanford University. I know Jeff from being the chair of the Emergency Medicine Informatics and Data Science for our Society of Academic Medicine, which is a really fun group of other emergency physician informaticians across the country. We have similar joking session once a month at least, where we get to try to make the digital infrastructure for our hospitals a little bit better while keeping things light. I was just saying that I'm from New York, from the East Coast originally. I live in the Bay Area now. Went to college at Bass in the Hudson Valley, and I started my sort of informatics journey there. I feel like you could do a whole podcast of how you get to where you are in informatics, because as an EM person, where you're already a generalist, informatics is like the generalist subspecialty of generalism. If you really want to do everything, then informatics and emergency medicine are right for you. But I got interested in the field back at when I was like studying telemedicine and like space medicine as an undergraduate, like doing a thesis in science, technology, society. It was a major they had there. Then I went to Columbia for med school and wound up running into some amazing people, George Ripsack, Gil Cooperman, who were like, telemedicine is informatics, you know, biomedicine is informatics, big data is informatics, informatics is everything. And I was the only medical student like, oh my God, it's great. It's all the stuff. Mm-hmm. Global health is informatics. So I got to work on a really cool ton, like fun projects during medical school, went to the Bay Area to pursue emergency medicine, which I found, as we've talked about this before, just sort of the field where your point of care data needs are so acute. You don't know who comes in the door. You have to learn about them. You have to get a summary. You have to place orders. You have to manage their outpatient. Our digital infrastructure is so unique, but it was also the way all of medicine is going. So I really found emergency fun and was like, you know, if you're interested in informatics, you got to go to the Bay Area. After emergency medicine residency, I went to Stanford to actually get my like formal training then at an informatics fellowship, which was not ACGME initially. It was grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. Stanford has had a couple of informatics fellowships. They have their current CI one, but they also had a medical informatics one, the VA, since like the 90s, which is housed in the university at the Freeman Spoglian, a bit more health policy related, and also looking at health systems. And so I worked with people, Steve Ash and Doug Owens, and people who do some big picture medicine, which led me ultimately to staying on at Stanford and a great place to be able to do research on how information is really, I tend to do much more, you know, academic informatics work, but realistically, I see it all as academic and industry and community, because the goal is to try to make it so that patients can navigate their own journey. And we as doctors can help understand and meet them wherever they are, whether that's hospital or ED or so, see it all.
So when did you finish? So let's just, we'll come back to, to Dick, but since you talked a little bit about your journey, you finished at Stanford when?
In 2020.
2020. So you're 2 years out. Are you still in the first job you got?
Still in the first job I got. Yes. And loving it. It's been a blast. Although it was funny to finish during like the pandemic, which also for me as a clinician affected the way I, the Bay Area definitely has the startup scene and lots, and I've worked with startups and have been on startups at different times too. There was definitely this like industry push, and then COVID and the focus on just being able to provide care for so many people who all of a sudden had such huge health has really recentered me in the passion side of medicine.
So the clinical volume, did it drop off in the Bay Area? Did it pick back up? What happened?
Like, I feel like most places, it has been a roller coaster. You know, it's just been sort of anytime you think you've got it under control, there's a new thing. I came to New York in April to go home to Columbia of 2020 to be in the COVID unit that got set up out of like the Milstein hospital, like pavilion, with some of the like Army Corps of Engineers people, and learned how to set up a unit. Took some of my informatics knowledge of how to get Epic to run in a made up hospital in like, you know, 5 days.
Cool.
It is, I feel like it's just been a roller coaster, but emergency medicine, you know, sort of riding the wave and sort of being ready for whatever comes at you. So I don't know, the whole time has been, when you're in it, it's sort of hard to see the forest trees. The clinical load and the burden and the needs change moment to moment. And what you really want is to be in like a ship with other people that, you know, is able to redirect and divert and not be point in time.
So what percent informatics are you?
I'm like 50-50.
Okay.
Yep.
You like that?
I love that. I think this, for where I'm at in my clinical career, as we've talked about too, I love my clinical job. It's the weird to be at the place in your career where the easiest part of your day is seeing patients, because it's like, oh, this is, I know this. I know how to take care of patients. And then you're like, well, now I would like to address a really big issue of like data sharing, putting together a multi-center research project. And you're like, oh my God, this is so difficult. And I don't know anything. And nobody knows anything. And we're all trying to like fix it together at every one of these, you know, big institutions across the country. So I've always thought it's nice to have the day-to-day of just showing up in a space where you get patients that are appreciate, have like a need, and you can address that. And then you, the other half of your time being able to work that has longer goals.
So who pays the 50%? Is it the Department of Emergency Medicine?
Yep. I'm all within the Department of Emergency
Medicine. Okay. So did you look for jobs in the informatics department or tried to get money through that way? Or did you just go right to the department?
I didn't. I went right to the department. Yeah, maybe I should talk to some of my colleagues here at the meeting. But the way the department was growing, the Department of Emergency Medicine was very much in a growth phase and was looking to have people sort of all in Stanford when I was coming on. So I feel like that was really nice.
So were they offering a job at the time? Was it a listed job as you were looking for an informatician?
No. I was looking for was academic faculty, and then within the scope of what they needed, as part of.
So I was at the clinical informatics program directors meeting this morning, and they said that 40% of the positions that are that we call informatics that graduates have gotten from who graduated from informatics programs have been unadvertised jobs. So they're advertised, but not as an informatics job. So they may be going to public health or something, and they say their perspective is going to be informatics. And it sounds like, you know, based on our conversations, you do a lot of informatics. It's just that that isn't what the title specifically was when you signed.
Yeah, and then I wonder if that's the same for clinical informaticists versus research informatics and versus like people who are straight PhDs coming out to or what. Obviously, we're talking more about clinical informatics, but I want that 40% is no.
Yeah, because the PhD jobs are like, you know,
they're
usually
pretty listed.
They list them as like for a department, like an informatics department, but they don't say whether it's going to be, well, sometimes they list whether it's going to be in a certain track, but not always.
Yeah, I wonder. I just wonder if that 40% is that. I feel like for most of the clinical jobs, or most of my colleagues, and most people I know that have done CI, we've talked about this even on our group meetings. Like, wear a lot of different hats, and everyone's wearing like six different hats at any one point in time. And again, informatics kind of touches all of them. So even just operational roles, we know a lot of people who are straight up operations, but have informatics training or background. It's hard to know. Like, are you more operate? You're sort of like the Venn diagram has all of them in it.
Thanks for mentioning the Venn diagram.
It's like a multi, there's like a six-axis Venn diagram in there.
Yeah, I got that on my checklist. Let me just mark that up. All right. So what's your day-to-day look like on the informatics side?
Day-to-day on the informatics is interesting. So here I'm presenting here on some of the cool research with a multi-center work that we did with UCSF and Kaiser. When I was in fellowship, I was moonlighting at Kaiser and so knew some of their system. I trained at UCSF and then I'm at Stanford. So we did a stroke project looking at audit log data and how what the context of the care environment in the emergency department is when strokes happen. Mm-hmm. And so I would say like generally it's sort of one of those like one day a week is towards the hardcore research side, looking through audit log data, working with the data scientists, communicating with the team and doing like straight research projects and next plans and maybe grant searches and what that'll be. One day a week, I try to like focus on operations. So stuff like discharge referrals and how we safely get patients out. That's like more my CI operations role is sort of getting, I feel like to me, there's a model for emergency medicine, which is the bell curve of pre-hospital part of emergency medicine, like EMS, emergency services. And then we get to the ER and then we're kind of like, oh, now when you leave the ER, we're sort of done. But you have that tail of, well, how do you go home? What's the next stage? What's your follow-up? Exactly. And so working on a project now that's trying to discharge referrals and sort of closing that, which we know if you're at a community shop, you might just say, call your insurance, been out. But the healthcare system, especially Stanford and Kaiser, trying to link everybody and make sure. Like, so I spend about a day doing that. Then there's straight up like research projects. I also do an analytics committee. So then I would say part of a day is on an analytics committee where we evaluate.
You've got more than like seven days a week.
Exactly. This is on to day three. Part of the day is then evaluating search for the emergency department and helping them understand what data is accessible and where they can get it and what they're putting into their IRB. So we have a group called the Emergency Data Analytics Committee, and we look through what everybody wants to do, and we try to help them get their research. And then, you know, I do the chair of the informatics group and data sciences group and working on our project trying to launch. So, and then I have my clinic where you're like working and you're like, God, I hate this order set. This is the worst order set. I can't believe it's like this. Then you ping the other informatics people. And so it's a fun web of, it's a fun community web where everybody wants everything to be better and each responsibility in classic informatics fashion in a different realm. The research group really is not interested in the operational. The operational may or may not be into the research perspectives, but ultimately at the end of the day, the biggest high yield things are trying to make sure patients get good care and the physicians can provide good care without getting out.
So you're doing analytics, but not as much of the, so like if someone needs a new order set, they're not coming to you.
That goes to Ian Brown, my colleague, he's been around at Stanford for, you know, Epic's been at Stanford for a long time. And so he is the straight, like, clinical informatics app.
So when you were applying for your job, it was more of a CV. You were like, you were showing what you had done so far? Mm-hmm. Or was it that, well, they say people get their jobs from their, you know, not based on their CV. It's based on what people say. It's networking.
Yeah.
And you had already worked there, so they knew you were producing.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what happened?
I think so. It's hard to know. I wasn't on the other side of the table, but it was mostly about what my background, research, and skills are, and then sort of what the department is, so far as I can tell. And then you're trying to align for clinical departments, where are we going? What is our research niche? How does this align with institutional goals, institutional research goals, and department ones? And so there's a lot of alignment because that's sort of what brought me in the first. And that's sort of what keeps me, I'm loving it so far. It's been an absolute blast. I love my colleagues. And again, everyone's trying to do really awesome stuff. So it's fun to be, in fact, it's almost hard because you're like, everyone's cool things. I want to be with everybody all the time.
I know. It's like, yes. Don't get manic because you like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, I want to do everything.
And us ER doctors are very social. So we're like, we kind of want to know what everybody's up to, our like internal medicine colleagues, the pediatricians, everybody. So I think they're looking for someone that could wear multiple hats, navigate that space, department too.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you have had more than one job over the years, Dick.
I have. And my model of where my job comes from is so very different from Christian's. I fear and also welcome that perhaps my avenue to where I got really is no longer a model, because I'm of probably the second generation of informaticists, not, the classic 70s, 80s pioneers, the people on whose shoulders stand, but the next generation. When I started private practice and hospital practice, we did everything. I was that squeaky wheel guy. Mm. And for example, laboratory displays, I hated what I was looking at. First of all, it was on paper. In another, it was actually on, printed sheets. It was okay, but, I could read it, but it was, not chronological and reverse, the bottom to top, it's a mess. I got that reputation. And so when my hospital started to move finally towards an electronic record, I was volunteered.
Isn't it voluntold? Is that were volunteered?
No, they kind of said, who's interested in this? And I was always interested. So I sat on the selection. Mm-hmm. One day we traveled to somewhere in Brooklyn, New York. We're in central Pennsylvania. I forget the hospital, but anyway, and I also forget whatever EHR they were on. But on the way back, I was in the car with my chief medical officer. And I had learned by this time in my career to ask for what I want. Mm-hmm. So I said, Joe, if we're going to do this, you're going to need a physician advocate. You're going to need somebody who will bring this project forward. He just sort of nodded, as was his style, encouraging me to talk more. And I said, and I'd kind of like to do that post. He looked at me square in the eye and said, good, because if you hadn't asked, I would have told you. So that's how I became a CMIO. And I basically wrote the job description because the IO at the time hadn't ever worked with me. Mm-hmm. And it was cobbled together at a time when I was still doing quite a bit of clinical practice. At the time, I modeled a job where I was 60% clinical, 40% informatics, which meant I had about 120% worth of a job, because two part-time jobs.
Were they paying you 120%?
No. And I already knew at that point that I wanted to do some research, and they said, okay, just do your thing. It wasn't paid separately. But at the time, I was contracted for the part that was informatics, and my internal medicine practice was paying me the rest of my salary. So together, between the two, I was earning about the same as I had earned.
Okay. You were group practice?
Yeah, huge. The largest single specialty practice in South Central Pennsylvania.
And they were paying you through your group practice, or you're getting one?
No, I had my salary from the group practice, and I had my contract.
You had a separate.
Totally separate from the hospital. And over the years that evolved, that was late 2005 and 2009. So let me just throw in one brag. So in 2005, when we started this whole project and ultimately went live in 2007, we were actually the first community hospital to have an electronic record in South Central. Now, Hershey was ahead of us, but that's an academic. In 2008, 6 months after we went live, we were the first community hospital in South Central Pennsylvania to have COE. And so this was fun. We were actually making a lot of headway. 2009, I left the private practice, became a hospitalist, and my time started to shift. So long story short, the last time I actually rounded on patients, January of 2001, almost ago, at one of our COVID surges. And since then, I've been pretty much 100% informatics, along with the research stuff that I do, the educational stuff, the academic. So I'm in a lot of areas.
Is that money coming from different streams then? Is part of it through the academic, part of it through applied, or is it just they're giving you an informatics salary?
At Penn State, which has bought our hospital 2 years ago, exactly to November, in fact, November 1st, 2020, I am a member of the Information Services, or IT, or IS, and my 100% of my salary comes from services.
Okay.
But before that, Geisinger owned our hospital, and my income stream somehow in the background was from four different accounts.
Okay.
I was getting one check, but I was allotted informatics and hospitalist time, research allocation, administrative time, and I didn't know where all the buckets were coming from. I let administration handle it, but I got one check.
How was it having four bosses?
No, I only had one boss.
Okay.
I only had one boss, but I was, you know, addressing the, and basically, since I've been known at this hospital since 1994, they kind of knew me, and basically, my boss at the time, who was the CIO, said, basically, you're not punching a clock, get your work done. As long as you're done by the end of the day, I don't care how you, I answered a chief medical informatics officer for all of Penn State Health.
Mm-hmm.
It was an emergency, mm-hmm. Chris DeFlitch, you might even know him,
at
Penn State. So again, now it's more one boss, one financial stream, and I still get to do what I want.
That's awesome that you get to do what you want. How do you define this? Where's the academics in that? Like, how do you write papers with having only operational paycheck right now?
That's correct. I am mainly operation. And that was my focus with my boss at Geisinger as well. It was operation. So it's out of my interest, and some of it's on my own time. So I'll preface this by saying Amy has not paid me to say what I'm about to say, but true. When I started coming to AMIA in 2006, I've been here every year, and at the CIC every year that we weren't virtual, I've just met people. Mm-hmm. And one particular person, I don't know if we want to name names or drop names. The point is, I went up to somebody who does great research and I said, you know, you do great stuff. I've admired your work. I've read your paper. I read all of his papers because he writes. But my point is, I said, but you don't have a community hospital representative. I can do that. Great. So he pulled me into a lot of the project. And that's one way I've gotten to be an author or a co-author on some of these papers. Others
so,
I've done
internally.
So what
did you feel like you offered? You offered like the perspective of a community physician and co-authorship, or were you like producing data?
All three. Bringing the research locally. I was also at the chair of the IRB at the time of our hospital. So I knew I could get this by. And I could give data from a community hospital. And most of this researcher's colleagues are researchers predominantly, but he also works with a lot of physicians. And I was saying, okay, I'm a physician perspective in a community hospital, and that's different from this, that, and the other academic. And also, at this point, I had practiced writing enough that I'm a better editor than I am a writer. But also, I was looking at some stuff within our own EHR, like this order set is horrible, and I need to rewrite it. Or we were looking to reduce alerts, which was where one of my papers came with very local people. And two papers that we produced on length of stay related to the frequency of COE, which was also totally local data. I just looked at the data one day and I saw that as CPOE rates went up, length of stay went down. And I said, whoa, is there a correlation? So I got a statistician data analyst, a guy with a PhD from the EHR vendor that we were working with time, and churned it out and out came paper.
That's great.
So it was the effort of, opportunities, grab it, talk to people, keep writing, because sometimes what you write is terrible and you have to edit it, and take the criticism that the reviewers and everybody else will give you because it's pretty on target, and just keep working it until you have something. And it just rolled from there.
Well, that's good that you're writing. I mean, you can be a part of AMIA, coming, listening to what other people have to say, but there's kind of this feeling of like, well, what are you presenting this time? You know, so you should come with the idea that you're going to present a poster or you're going to do something that lets you talk about what you're finding too. And writing, it's a hard thing for me.
It is. It's very hard.
It's hard for a lot of people.
I never considered myself a good writer, but I decided that with all the various listservs that are out there, not only with AMIA, but with an organization called AMDIS that some are familiar with, which is more like cover up the microphone. No, that's mainly CMIO types. Different.
It's a valuable listserv.
Yeah, it's a different organization. I decided that I would throw out the ideas, not throw out, I would put out there my idea, and I early on preface it by saying, is this right? I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, and not be afraid to say something totally outlandish and wrong if you accept the criticism. Yes, that's outlandish and wrong. wrong, and so I could correct my ways. In other words, I became open to the fact that there's a lot of help out there. And you see, I don't know if you know this in ER medicine, but in internal medicine, we're kind of in a shell because we do a lot of stuff in internal medicine and we interact with specialists all the time, but we don't interact with other internists that much except our partners.
Yeah.
And I poo-pooed the concept of networking when I was in private practice advocating for my patients. That's my reputation, by the way, as a clinician, is I advocate very strongly for my patient. And if I feel they're not getting the care they need, medications they need, or insurance company isn't cooperating, to your point, Christian, a while back, I fight for them. And that's not networking. That's advocating.
Yeah, that is advocating.
And in informatics, it's totally about networking.
Yeah, it's true.
There's an advocate.
Compromising.
I think there's also something to be said about even just in medicine. I think one of the things I thought about from my own experience as a patient, right when I finished residency, I got hit by a car. I wound up in my own ER with a broken hip. Mm-hmm. And you realize medicine is really difficult without a team.
Yes.
And this has been one of the areas that I've been trying to push some of my research into, is that the computer and the SIS can help us do our jobs, but also it's a team sport. And EM kind of gets that. We like start the day with the sort of like, sure, go team, kumbaya. But realistically, all of it. I was reading a post a friend sent yesterday about a student in New York who was left on a subway stand waiting for the train, and wound up making small talk with the woman next to her, who was an undocumented immigrant who she helped get to one of the student-run clinics at Sinai, which I have like known friends to do that. And it's funny that our system is so difficult to navigate that we look for technological solutions, but it's hard for us even as physicians to manage our own care. When I couldn't figure out how to take different pain relievers, so my pharmacist friend made me alerts on my phone and like a calendar event, even though I know what I'm doing, but I was like confused and couldn't go up and down the steps. And then friends would bring me, you know, like food and shorts because my leg was massive, none of my clothes would fit. And so I was like, I just remember sitting there and being like, I love this. I love being in the place for me in the emergency room when people have a problem. And it really is social. We learn about practice management in the ED. We see what others are doing. Sometimes we're on our own or single coverage, but a little bit of it is learning what are the social networks that help us learn. When do people start doing well? So one of the part of the project that I'm presenting on with Julia Milstein and Adler Milstein and Jonathan Chen and Vinny Liu is like, when people work together more, turns out we get a little bit better at our stroke care, but we also kind of need to learn from other humans, and then we need to learn about the experience of it from the patient. So it doesn't happen in a silo, and I think of some of, at least my perspective on informatics sometimes has been that we are trying to look for the ways to make this simpler for one person to navigate, and maybe leaning into this element, we can use these systems to actually help each other create a better network such that you can actually be robust and make it through everything. It's hard to do. It's hard to get people to thread the needle, but it's easier if you build it.
Nothing like being a patient to become a doctor, yeah, although you can't have every illness that exists or injury.
No, you can't. You can try.
Yeah. Slightly limited.
Yeah. But you're right. Informatics is also sport because there's all kinds of new stuff that, and some of it is so way above my head in understanding that I need colleagues to explain things.
So have you been mostly at the same hospital for your career?
With all of these changes in my career and the world swirling around me, to use your analogy before we started this podcast, my desk hasn't, I'm in exactly the same place in the same building.
Okay, well, that's a good thing for longevity, because they say that these CMIOs, you know, they turn over every 4 or 5 years.
No,
that's not you.
No, but I think that's what I meant at the beginning of what I was saying, is that my model of how my job has progressed, I'm not sure exists. Yeah. But because I grew up at one particular hospital, I was also at several other hospitals through the private practice, but I focused on one. A lot of early CMIOs arose, I don't know exactly what this term means, but arose organically within the organization because they knew who you are and they understood where you're going, and I understood the culture. And one of the problems with people coming in from the outside is, yes, it's new blood, new ideas, all kinds of good things, pros for it, but they also don't necessarily know the culture locally. And people, processes, and technology, we've heard that triad all the time, 90% of it is.
Yeah, I struggled with that, to be honest. I got this new job a year ago at Kettering, and they don't run their ER the way I ran it, you know? And I'm just one cog, and they are cogs that have been there for a long time, and so I'm learning how to fit in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people complain, you know? It's like, oh, Dr. Nielsen's trying to do it this way. It's like, oh, I guess I can change, but it takes a lot of conversations and a lot of listening And so that's the way it is in informatics too.
One of the big things, just to brief aside on that, is a big part of informatics, our boards and jobs, is implementation science and change management. You know, it seemed weird when students ask about like that or what to study or what they need to know. And you're like, a lot of it is how to create culture and a culture of change. And that comes into lean, whether you believe it or not, any of these change management. But a big part of being a good informatician is listen first. You know, everything starts with sort of observing, listening, seeing if something's a real problem, identifying where the stakeholders are, and then going from there. And I feel like that's what a lot of us, it sounds like, are trying to do at our institute. You come, sit down, you offer perspective, but you're also humbled to know that maybe you didn't do it right before, but you want to be in a place where you're allowed to ask, and it can, you know, and you can try things, and then.
I don't know if you guys listened, but to my podcast, if you didn't, you're going to be surprised. I have super six questions.
We explained everything so well.
Number one, I guess we'll just go across, and Okay. Maybe I'll go back and forth. So what's your favorite informatics topic?
I'm very passionate about clinical decision support.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my focus, a lot of my research, and it's something that I think clinicians, day-to-day clinicians, could use the help and are barraged with all kinds of things that aren't helpful. We've all talked about alert burden, overriding lists, and all the rest. Yeah, it's all true. So we need to do something about that. Great from a lawyer's and an administrator point of view, but is it helping us? I'm not sure.
Totally. I would say I feel like the overarching topic is sort of human-computer interaction, but the element now of is the stuff we're doing actually helping or hindering the ability coming. Obviously, it's a rising topic in the informatics world and the computer fatigue and burnout associated with staring at us. So there's an element to this, which is where do we need to be looking? I'm loving
it. I'm asking us for one topic.
You only had one
topic. I know. It's all related.
Okay. What's your pet peeve in informatics?
Oh, Christian, you go first.
Okay, Christian.
What a quick dish. Pet peeve informatics is being asked all the time. What is informatics?
Did you say informatics or
informatics? But even that, you're like, well, do you mean clinical, medical, radiographic? Getting asked what informatics is like a pet, but it's necessary.
That's awesome that somebody cares enough to ask you.
It asks a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
So my pet peeve, and I'm surprised I couldn't come up with this right away, is being asked to fix something where someone has already made a decision about workflow, the order set, whatever it might be, and then realizing that the real solution would have been if they had involved us before they made the...
Actually, yeah, quick additional pet peeve is that when
does
people
get,
ask...
Wait, does
yeah.
he get to?
No, he doesn't get to.
Yeah, when someone asks about a problem that they haven't looked into whether there's a solution yet or like looked for a reason. Like, yeah.
All right. This one you have to answer first. We'll go back and forth. Okay. What's your favorite movie?
Oh, that's easy. It's a little crude, but it's my favorite movie. It's My Cousin.
Oh my God, so good.
Well, I grew up in New York City, so what can I say?
You have a cousin, Vinny?
I do. My family is Italian-American from Brooklyn, and my mom, and that strikes like a chord with my cultural heritage. Mine is like Empire Strikes Back always. It's just like a classic. I can't been there my whole life.
Yeah, that's special. It's funny how like so many memories. All right, favorite informatics study or book? And you can name your own study if you want.
Well, it goes back to clinical decision support. The first and second edition were Bob Green is the editor now. It's Green and Guillaume Delfiol.
Mm-hmm.
So full disclosure, I'm an author on the third edition chapter on CDS governance and implementation. So I just squeezed in my other topic.
Yeah, way to go.
My favorite book related has been the book Weapons of Destruction. I forget the author's name. I'm totally blanking. Let's look up right now. I'm just bad with names. But I love that book and the sort of unconsequence learning and analytic life, which I think is well presented and is a really great example with many different social examples of how, you know, you can use information and data, which I think is important. That's my STS background always coming through, which is the unintended consequence.
All right. Any informatics regrets or mistakes? You've been in this a long time. I know you've made a mistake.
Yeah, I have made mistakes. I guess the regrets is not recognizing when you're making a mistake or when someone tells you you're making a mistake and barging ahead anyway. Got to listen to your peers. You've got to listen to your critics who are giving destructive criticism never help, but constructive criticism, you've really got to listen when you have to change the direction of the boat that you're captain. And without going into details about where I've made disaster decisions, you can pull yourself back, you can make a new decision, and you can admit that what you said first was wrong.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, we're doctors here on this panel. Yeah. That's something that I think from a personality point of view is difficult for doctors to do, but it is a life and person lesson that needs to be learned, in my opinion.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I feel like not necessarily I guess the mistake or the error is really not just starting, or the belief that what you're doing is going to help people without like starting with the open-ended observation and letting it drive that. I've moved much more towards that element myself. I've done some global health projects, and there's a lot of research on the desire to come in with solutions, but to really reframe, and that most of what informatics does well is when they start with a clear problem. Don't be a hammer looking for nails. You know, be someone who is available to help people find. As part of when we were talking about the jobs, the space of the ED group that I'm with right now is really going to help understand their problem well. But I feel like when I started, it was like very excited. And even now in tech, we're like, all you need is a solution, this app, and it'll change your whole behavior and life. And you're like, it's not going to work that way. You really have to start earlier up.
I think there's a lot of good insight there. Mm-hmm. All right, last question is, what's your five-year informatics prediction? This is your opportunity to be a seer.
Well, first, a preface. If you're talking about my five-year projection, as opposed to keep informatics in general,
yeah. Yeah. First.
Okay, mine is, first of all, I'm retiring.
Congrats.
So probably by the end of January. So I've done my tour of duty. It's time to hand it off. I've done a lot of very satisfying stuff. My wife, for example, when asked about me, mm-hmm. pretty much says he's having altogether too much fun, which is good because that was not always true during my private practice. And I've come to accept that as long as I'm having fun in the right now, I'm still having fun. So maybe that's the time to retire is what I decided.
That might be true.
But what I would like to for informatics, and it's still kind of a dream, but we're getting closer, is as a clinician, I walk into a patient's room, say at the hospital or in the office, and my RFID identifies me coming, and the screens above and next to the patient show what I want to be looking at as an internist, you know, vital signs, current medications, labs in the last 24 hours, you know, all the things that we put into our notes and sometimes cause note bloat. But all of the stuff that I want to display is visible to me and to the patient family. Mm-hmm. And I can glance at it while talking to the patient. And as I'm talking to the patient, active NLP, natural language process, is recording or doing mm-hmm. its thing better than the current ones that we have from at least two vendor products that I've tried. Leave it at that. Four vendor products. But anyway, we'll actually synthesize the conversation so that it takes into account the traditional things of the history, the physical examination, my assessment of the laboratory data, my explanation, questions that I'm answering, that sort of thing. And as I'm doing the orders, synthesize a plan for this patient. And essentially, when I walk out of the room, I've discussed this face-to-face with the patient and or the family, answered all their questions. And when I walk out, my note is also. And it's the time that's face-to-face, which is the most important, singularly most important thing about what I do, is 100% devoted to the patient and family. And when I leave the room, I'm done. Now, I can add to it, I can edit it, all those other good things. And there's pieces of this that are in place. The natural language processing, that's growing. The ability to display what I want through an RFID, that's kind of there, but it's not great. The synthesis of the conversation translated into the documentation of explaining. One thing I think I've earned as a clinician is I explain things well to patient families. Mm-hmm. I want that in them, and I want my plan, my assessment and plan, which I will verbalize to the patient. Okay, well, your blood count's getting better. I see your kidney function moving. That's what I want in a note from my colleagues. I don't want three streams worth of all the lab data. I can read that myself. I want to know what they're thinking.
But Bill and Dick, Billy.
Billing. And billing should, I know, billing should fall out of that secondarily. Well, if they actually change it to, you know, the medical decision making, then actually my billing would go up. But all right. I want our notes in the record to be communication between professionals.
Yeah.
And I want to be done when I leave the room as far as the quote unquote paper. So that's I'm saying.
So you want to spend 90% of your time with the patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So you're
5 years ago,
predicting
I was saying,
it or you're hoping for
like,
it?
I think Dick's leaving a mic drop. He's like, he's like 5 years. Ooh, listen, we got to start working yesterday.
I'll revise it. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when I was expressing this dream, I said maybe 10 years. So that's your five.
Okay.
But I think it's more like 10 or 15 from now.
What are you going to be doing in a year? You're retiring. You have plans.
I do. More skiing. That's why I got 2 new knees last June.
Okay.
Spending time with my grandkids, traveling if COVID and what else allows. You know.
That's great.
Having fun.
All right. Well, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, that was.
I'm halfway there, though. It is scary.
That is epic. I agree with everything you said at the end of where.
Not necessarily epic. It could be any age.
Yeah. Touche. And then you couldn't let the EHR slip through. That was perfect. I think, it sounds like there's two elements. One is sort of like where it'll be in 5 years as sort of warning, and then the hope. And I agree with everything you're saying, where we should be going to of a more physician and patient-centered infrastructure to really enable us to experience care in a way that's not our doctors looking at their computer, feeling detached, and everything negative in between. I also think when you look at how the field is growing and the amount of interest in AI, I think that's wonderful, but I know we're probably heading into the trough again and the hype cycle. And so I do worry that some people's that thinking through or trying to think more holistically in the next 5 years about what is a good prediction or what is important or what changes the way medicine is delivered versus just the ability to do or use, but that's all part of the evolution. And then, the hope for me is that we will begin to actually see how valuable it is to focus our electronic and health system, patient monitoring, everything on the experience and the way people are able to make decisions. Because even when you have great predictive ability, people's lives play by the rules. I mean, for me, that was an example in my own life. And then I see that for other patients, that the ability to do what's right and always. So we need systems that help us enable people to travel, do it in a way that's authentic.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks guys for being on my show.
Thank you.
And do you have any last words before we close up?
Thanks for having us. It's great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Oh, we haven't got questions.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jackie Gerhardt. I'm a physician at Epic, family medicine background. It's nice to meet you guys. Thank you. And my question is, there are always new ways of creating technology for people. And being on the side of it that now does it in the industry, I'm curious if that has ever crossed your mind and how you would interact with those folks.
That's a great question.
Yeah. In informatics, we must work with our vendor because of a lot of reasons, not the least of which is they've got the technological background, skill set, resources to create the things that I'm dreaming about. And it's a partnership, just like medicine to sport. And I mean, look at all the institutions across the country that develop their own electronic record, and they're all abandoning. Major impulse was use. They couldn't keep up with that. Okay. But also the maintenance of these disparate systems that were not probably going to be interoperable means that you needed a vendor that has experience doing this. And, most of the vendors that have experience in the United States also have experience abroad. And I think that's becoming more and more important as travel and interact internationally. So the interaction with the vendor is crucial. I'm not sure if that answers your question exactly. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, that answers my question. I was curious if there's specific ways that you've gone about doing so that were most successful or ones that you think we on the vendor side could improve upon.
Okay, well,
let me say some things first.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of what I've done or has influenced vendors, but I like to think sometimes that it has. Like I remember when usability was, we just felt like usability in emergency informatics was super important because it was during the time when the best of breed vendors were going away and everyone was getting all scripts and a couple of people were getting Epic at the time and just, other, Cerners and that. And it was, and I felt like we convinced a third party group Class to start doing end user interviews on the usability of the programs. And so we kind of went outside to try to influence them. And then from there, we were able to, so then they got rated. And because there was an external group making them feel good or bad about what they were doing, I think we thought at the time that it had a lot of influence on Epic at that point. And some of the other vendors were starting to talk the talk yet, but they weren't like, man, I hate to push Epic, but you know, Epic at least started really seriously looking at usability at that point. And I felt like we'd help turn the ship at that point. So I'm just giving one experience. There are probably other strong ways to do it, but I wanted to hear what you guys had to say.
The way I interpret the question too is why, in what ways have we thought about working, or would we go work with like Epic or any particular vendor too? And there's been many over time. To me, the way I chose jobs and to think about what I wanted to do, at least at this stage in my career, was to think from the clinical experience side and sort of the research and practice. And again, a lot of this had to do with just being in the ER and seeing how care is provided, and then wanting to really come up and formulate and see how medicine is being practiced, as opposed to starting with one. When I've worked with individual vendors, even small EHR groups, there's multiple ones, obviously, in the Bay Area that have started with urgent cares and clinics, which have been very fun to iterate on. Again, there's this element that like the practice of medicine and aligning that with the goals of our ability to document, which also has a policy, a billing, many different elements. So to me, I see that to me, the crux or the place I can offer is by like doing the work at an academic center or a place that has a high percentage of patients, such that I can give that perspective back to what all the other doctors are feeling, as opposed to being at one place and trying to find the way to improve that individual product. It just sort of depends where you are and whether you're like on that part of the system side, or whether you're committed to what, you know, evangelizing and being part of one company that can do many, many big, wonderful things too. So I have a pretty agnostic view generally about like whether industry is evil for all of these things. It's all a community and all part of the social structure and the social contract. So I found that for me, the crux was like showing up in the ER in an academic center where you have questions and various types of people and practitioners, and that way I could gain perspective. And that's what kept me there.
So my more amplified answer to it is all from personal experience, but I was just thinking, I've interacted at some level with six different vendor products, and all of them across the board early on really just kind of said, this is our product. And twice I was confronted with a vendor that basically said, oh, I thought that's the way you wanted it. To which my answer was, yeah, but you never asked. The two that really never asked and never learned from that no longer exist. And the others have learned how to interact with us and ask the question, well, what do you want? And actually listen and tell us the possibility. And they've thrived and have larger market than they had before. And it's not just Epic, you know, it's others. But the point is, it's a team sport also. And I think the vendor is listening to what the clinician, and by clinicians, by the way, I don't mean just physicians. I mean nurses, pharmacists, physical therapy, the whole, anybody that, you know, looks at a patient, even radiologists.
The patient's family even.
Yeah, the family and the patient. As long as they're listening to what works and works, that's going to improve the product.
Well, we'll finish now. If you have questions afterward, come on and talk to us. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Wrap up.
Well, I'm glad you liked it enough to listen to the end. Sorry about the wonky audio. Go ahead and send me any comments if you have some, and check out the show notes for links to their favorite books. Have a good night.
Get paid for what you do.